So this morning, what I want to start is I just want you to think about, has it ever crossed your mind what I'm going to call the legacy of faith that brought you to where you are right now? All that has gone before. Because Jesus has been gone for over 2,000 years, and so how did his life, his message, the gospel, how did it come to you? You ever thought about that before? I was thinking about it this week, and you know, I'm here because many, many others cared enough about the gospel that they gave up their life for it. They're willing to tell others about it, and that's why I'm here today. This whole legacy of faith being passed on and on and on, generation by generation. And that's why I'm a believer today. And it's kind of crazy to me to think I'm the result of 2,000 years of faithful testimony. Now, over the past few years here at Living Rock Church, we've taken a couple weeks out of every year to look at some of the great, what I would call, movers and shakers of the faith. We've called them the heroes of the faith. And no doubt, some of them would be horrified. Actually, I'd say most of them would be horrified that I'm calling them that, and that we're even taking a Sunday to talk about them, because the more of these individuals I study, the more I realize they were people who hated the spotlight, right? Didn't want to be in the spotlight, really thought very little of themselves, and they thought very much of Christ. And that is a theme that runs throughout all these different individuals' lives. But I'm reminded of the words of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. Paul is speaking to the Corinthians, and he says this: "Be imitators of me as I am of Christ." And that's the simple goal of this series and of the message today, is just to learn from the examples of those who have gone before. And so today what I want to do is to introduce you to a woman by the name of Amy Carmichael. And if you're like me, up until last week, I knew very, very little about her, except for maybe her name I had heard once or twice, but I couldn't have told you any more than that. And so I just want to give you an overview of her life. I want to draw out some spiritual principles, and hopefully, too, she was actually a very prolific writer, and so when I get a chance throughout the message, I'm going to read some of the things she wrote and how she spoke of her experience, and talk about a little bit about the great work of her life, which I'll get into shortly. So she was born December 16th, 1867 was the year, to David and Catherine Carmichael in the Irish village of Mill Isle. And her parents loved the Lord, and they wanted their kids to love the Lord, and so it was something they instilled in them from a young age. And Amy actually tells this story of when she was 3 years old. Like, how she can remember, I have no idea. But she remembers, at the age of three, one night her mother sat her down and taught her to pray. And her mother said, "Amy," she goes, "when you pray, Jesus hears. And because he hears, he's going to answer." And then she showed Amy how to pray. And so that night after her parents had left, she thought she would put her mom's theory to the test as a three-year-old. And there's one thing she always wanted. She had brown eyes. Her mom had blue eyes. And she loved the color blue. And so she prayed that night. She said, "Jesus, can you make my eyes blue just like my mom's?" And she went to sleep fully expecting that would be the result in the morning. She woke up. She rushed to the mirror. She looked, and her eyes were still brown. And she thought, okay, well, how, my mom said it was supposed to work, that if I prayed, Jesus would answer, but my eyes are still brown. What happened? And then it came to her. She said, almost as if a still small voice, "Isn't no an answer too?" And from the age of three, she grasped that truth, that sometimes when we pray, just because we don't get the answer we expected doesn't mean that God didn't answer. And so this morning, can I say this? Parents, don't underestimate the impact that you have on your kid's life, the difference you might be making in every little moment. And you know, I'll say this, as we've studied these heroes of the faith over the last couple of years, it's kind of a theme that most of these individuals were the product of godly parenting. And I just, my own testimony is that I'm here today because my parents loved the Lord and that was a priority. And I remember watching them and going, okay, whatever they have, it's real. Like, it makes a difference in their life, and I want whatever that is. However, on the other hand, we have to also acknowledge that we can only do so much in leading someone to the Lord. But salvation is wholly and entirely a work of God in the heart and in the spirit. And so that's also a part of Amy's story and kind of her ongoing story. Is she was a little bit of a strong-willed individual. That might be understating it a little bit. Very fiery. You know, she described herself as a wild bird child. That's what she called herself when she was young. A wild bird child, because she felt like she was always being put in a cage. Like, rules and etiquette and manners she did not care for. And then when she went off to boarding school, she became a little bit of the ringleader for any kind of mischief that was going on. She was usually behind it. You know, maybe not on the front side, but always on the back side, always scheming. And I remember a story once a pastor was telling, and I can't recall who it is for the life of me, but this pastor was telling a story of back when he was a youth pastor. And he was walking down the hall of the church, and he saw this little boy just screaming down the hall, and right after him, his mom was frantically trying to catch him. And so the youth pastor, he kind of headed him off. He stopped the little boy and said, whoa, you know, he can't be running in the halls. And the kid looked at him and then whoosh, clawed him right across the face and took off running again. And the mom is just horrified, like, oh, no, you know, my son's just clawed the youth pastor in the face. And the youth pastor said, no. He goes, it's okay. He said, I think he might make a good youth pastor one day. And as he's telling this, many years later, he said, and guess who's the youth pastor back at that church? That little boy. And so I look at that story of the little boy, and I've taken that to heart, and now even reading Amy Carmichael's story. But man, if parents, if that's you and you have a little kid that's pretty wild, God can use that. There's a lot of potential there. So it wasn't until she turned 16 that she actually made her faith her own, is a phrase we often use. And it was at this church missions conference. And of the experience, she would write this. I don't remember what the speaker, Mr. Edwin Arrowsmith, spoke about. Which, as a speaker, that just makes you feel good. I don't remember what he spoke about. But after his address, he told us to sing Jesus Love Me, This I Know, and then to be quiet. And during those quiet few minutes, in his great mercy, the Good Shepherd answered the prayers of my mother and father and many other loving ones and drew me, even me, into his fold. And afterwards, when I began to understand more of what all this meant, I found words which satisfied me. I do not know who wrote them, but here it goes. Upon a life I did not live, upon a death I did not die, another's life, another's death, I stake my whole eternity. And man, did she live that out. And so from that point on, it was like this spark had been ignited. And so she's only 17 years old at this point, but man, that did not slow her down one bit. She started all kinds of ministries. Any need she could see, she would try to meet. And so on Sunday mornings, she was gathering all the local neighborhood kids to her house. She'd feed them a meal and then teach them a lesson. She also got together with her peers, you know, the other teenagers in the area, and she said, hey, guys, we've got to get more serious about this. And so she started a group that was called the Morning Watch, and it was kind of an accountability group for reading scripture and prayer, and they would keep each other accountable throughout the week. She also started a weekly prayer meeting, and again, this is all of her own initiative. Just decided, hey, I want to start these things. And most impressive, she started an outreach group for a group of women known as the Shawleys. And that was the term used to describe the women who worked at the mills. And I get the impression they were kind of a lower class citizen in society. And so respectable people didn't really have dealings with this group of mill workers. And yet Amy saw that as a problem. She goes, no one's reaching out to him. And so at 17 years old, she did. When no one else was doing it. And I just find that so impressive. And I was reading her autobiography this week. You know, I thought, that's why I love youth ministry. And I've told our students this before, and I keep reminding myself even, that God has things for them to do now. Not someday, not down the road, but he has things, he's got kingdom work for our young people right now where they're at. Amazing things, great things that God has planned already. And I just want to read 1 Timothy 4, chapter 12, a familiar verse, but it says, "Let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity." And I always look at that as a twofold challenge, right? For those who are young, it's, hey, set the example, lead the way. For those who are older, it's, hey, help them lead the way. Don't look down on them, right? Give them those opportunities. And anyway, just an awesome testimony of Amy Carmichael at only 17 years old. And then at the age of 20, she had another major life shift. It's when she received a call to missions, and hers was very unique. And I'm actually going to let her tell the story here. This is a letter she wrote to her mom just a couple of days after this experience she had. She says, "I was in my room at night praying when I heard the words, 'Go ye,'" King James Version, "Go ye." "And I never heard it just so plainly before. I cannot be mistaken, for I know he spoke. He says, 'Go,' and I cannot stay. Mother, I feel as if I had been stabbing someone I loved. It's Friday now. I cannot finish this letter yesterday, because through all the keen, sharp pain which has come since Wednesday, the certainty that it was his voice I heard has never wavered. Though all my heart has shrunk from what it means, though I seem torn in two and just feel one big ache all over, yet the certainty is there. He said to me, 'Go.' Oh, nothing but that sure word, his word, can make it possible to do it. For until he spoke and I answered, 'Yes, Lord,' I never knew what it would cost. Many difficulties have risen in my mind. They seem very great. The crooked places seem very crooked, but it seems to me that all he asks is that we should take one step he shows us, and in simplest, most practical trust, leave all the results to him." So that was an experience she had at 20 years old. And you know, it was a very clear call, but sometimes we look at these stories of these heroes of the faith, and we just think that it always worked out for them. They're always certain of what to do, or that they always knew what God's will for them was, but that's not the case. She had a very clear calling, but man, it was a whole year after that before she would even find an opportunity to go overseas into missions. She'd spend the whole year knocking on all these closed doors, trying to kick them in, and they wouldn't open, which I admire a little bit, because sometimes when we reach a closed door in life, we go, oh, God must not want me to go that way. Maybe he wants us to be persistent, and that's what she did. And in 1893, she was aboard a ship headed for Japan, ready for what God had in store, and maybe not ready for how quickly that would come, how quickly the testing would start, because she said in her cabin on the ship, she had a tough time sleeping because it was infested with rats, cockroaches, and all kinds of insects. And the only way she could sleep is if she went outside on the deck and was able to get a little sleep out there. And yet, I think in typical Amy Carmichael fashion, she went into her room, she took some paint, and she painted these words up on the wall: "In everything, give thanks, even for the rats, cockroaches, and insects I have to share my bed with." Just as a daily reminder, okay, this isn't so bad. And she, you know what, I'll tell you what, from reading her autobiography, she really does seem to have an amazing perspective and positive outlook, especially when things were difficult or not going well. And so she headed over to Japan, didn't know it, but would only be there 15 months. Family crisis would call her back. And so I don't actually want to talk too much about her time in Japan, because it was very brief. But there was one story that was just extremely fascinating to me. And it was something she actually wrote about years later. And this is important to the story as well. So it wasn't recorded until years later in one of her books as she was talking about some of her missions work. And it's a story of how she met these three young Japanese guys. And she was trying to speak to them. She didn't know much of the language, so she was speaking in broken Japanese, and they were speaking broken English and trying to communicate. And the conversation went okay. She certainly didn't get him to a place of receiving Christ or anything, but she was able to give him a Bible. So these three young men, she gave him a Bible. She wrote their names each on the cover. And the one young guy, why he said this, I have no idea, but he looked at her and he said, "It will be a seed." Now, I'm not sure what that means, but he said, "This is going to be a seed, like you're planting a seed in my life." Not ready to receive Christ by any means. And so as she's recounting the story in her book, she said this to her readers. She said, "Hey, as you're reading this story from, you know, those months, years ago, will you not stop even now as you read and just pray?" Well, little did she know, there's an Oxford graduate who was recovering from the flu, and he was reading her book because he must have not had much else to do. And he got to that point in the book, and he goes, "Well, I'll pray." And so he prayed, just spent 5 minutes and prayed for that young man. 2 years later, this Oxford graduate was on a boat headed over to Japan, and he was able, after getting there, a couple weeks after getting there, he was able to share with a young man named Kano, and he led him to Christ, and wouldn't you know it, it was the guy who said, "This will be a seed." And so this Oxford graduate ended up answering his own prayer years after that event. And I thought, how cool is that story of how God works? So anyway, she had to go back home, family crisis, and then they recommissioned her to India, and she was not a fan. Part of the reason she had to go to India is because she had some health struggles, and it was because of the tropical climate in Japan, and so they thought India would be easier on her, and that kind of made her mad because she's like, "Well, now I'm taking the easy way out." And she had such a good experience in Japan, she didn't want to go to India. And it really didn't get better right away. She got over there. She's at the bottom of the totem pole as a missionary. She's the junior missionary. And didn't really get along with the others. And some of that's because of her, again, her little bit of a fiery spirit. Okay, she was always shocking most of the missionaries by the things she would do. She just didn't follow the manners and etiquette of the day. So that was part of it. She's a little bit eccentric. But on the other hand, she just couldn't believe how content they were. She said it just felt like they had no expectation that a harvest would ever be reaped. And I think this was the big issue. She said, "I don't know a lot about Islam, and I don't know a lot about the Hindu caste system." But she said, "Is not the power of God greater than the power of darkness, even in India?" And so where all these other missionaries had just settled, with the idea that, hey, we may not reach very many people, or probably not, because, you know, they've got a very strong sense of culture and religion here. And Amy just was not okay with that. And man, who knew the pieces that God was moving into place at that point? And so she's in India, a place she didn't really want to be. I think she wanted to be back in Japan. And then one day, God brought her life's work, what would become her life's work and mission, literally to her doorstep by way of a 7-year-old girl who had escaped from a Hindu temple. And as this 7-year-old, she came to Amy and started to tell her story. And this is what really cut her to the core and inspired her to give her life up for this great work. And it was that the temple system had this practice of every year they would take kids, and those kids were chosen to be married to the gods. But practically what that meant is they were trained to serve as temple prostitutes. And so once Amy found out about that, the child trafficking that was going on, she couldn't stand by. It just wasn't in her to let that keep happening. And so she started with that one little girl, and one by one, she started rescuing as many of the kids as she could out of that temple trafficking system. And man, she'd give the next 50-some years of her life to that one purpose. Never went home again after that. She had that one trip home for the family crisis, and then 50 years all spent in India in the same place. And it was a huge task because she had to take on really the whole culture and the society at that time, take on the whole religious traditions, right, and systems that are in place. And so that was met with a lot of opposition. There are so many stories. I'm going to just tell you a couple of them just briefly. But man, story after story of constantly being under attack. And at one point, she has one account of she had rescued a little girl. And some of these girls would hear about what she was doing at her refuge, and they would try to escape and get to her. But once they got there, the temple priests and the family would all come back to try to take the, or would come to try to take the kids back. And so on multiple occasions, she found herself surrounded by angry mobs. And man, somehow the Lord just delivered her, never caused her to fall under any harm. But yeah, so always, man, there's so many stories of being attacked by family members, temple priests are always coming after her. They started a lot of slander about who she was. There was a theory in the community that Amy was some kind of sorcerer that would put these little kids under a magic spell and then kidnap them. And so people started to think maybe she was kidnapping kids when really she was rescuing them. Even one story, they filed a lawsuit against her. Going to have to spend 7 years in prison if she didn't agree to give this one little girl back. And most of these kids are all between the ages of like 6 to 10. It's all very young. If she wouldn't give this little girl back. And so she came up with a plan. Maybe this goes back to her earlier mischievous years. She devised a plan. They disguised this little girl as a boy. And using the missionary network, they were able to get her to another country at night. They just like shipped her off, got her to another country where she was safe. And then it looked like she just ran away, so they couldn't file the lawsuit anymore. But man, she was tenacious in defending these kids and in rescuing these kids. At one point, she even decided that she wasn't okay just rescuing kids herself, but she wanted to take on the actual laws that were in place at the time. It was looking for a bigger social reform. And so in order to do that, she needed to let people know what was happening inside these temples. And so one night she disguised herself as an Indian woman by using, I think, coffee to stain her skin a darker color of brown. And thankfully, she had brown eyes. If she had blue eyes, it would have never worked. She would have been given away right away. And so she always looks back at that little prayer as a three-year-old and goes, man, God had a plan. If I had blue eyes, this would have never worked. And she was able to sneak inside this temple and get some information that she then passed on to the government officials. And man, long, difficult work, but just incredible. Hundreds of kids she was able to rescue. And eventually she was able to even change the laws that were in place, make it illegal, the practices that were happening in these temples. I remember one story way later in her life when, you know, public opinion had now changed. She wasn't the enemy anymore. And this prince actually wanted to give her a medal for her outstanding work in society and in the community. And she wrote back to him and said, can I refuse this? She goes, it feels wrong to have somebody actually like what I'm doing here. She's like, and you know, Jesus, he was rejected, so I feel a little bad if you're praising me now. So she didn't even want to receive the compliment from this prince. Now, more than that, it wasn't just that she rescued these kids, but she cared what she rescued them to, if that makes sense. And this was actually an area of conflict, I know, for those who were supporting her, because they just thought, man, it's all about getting people saved. But for Amy, it was like, okay, but what are we saving them to? And so she wanted them to have a place. And so over her 50 years, she built multiple dormitories, built a hospital. And I don't know if you guys remember, we covered George Mueller a year or two ago. And it's very much like George Mueller's story. It was all completely supported. She never went into debt as she's building all of these dormitories, hospital, even a small church. And so she did it all on support, and she never asked for any needs, right? She just prayed and trusted that the Lord would provide. And over those 50 years, there is some huge upheaval happening in the world. And you talk about economic crisis. She had to go through World War I and World War II. And never once did they not have what they needed. And so if I tried to cover all these stories, man, we'd be here all day. There's so many amazing testimonies. And all I can do is an introduction today. And so my hope is that if you're interested in her, or if this is has piqued your curiosity, I just encourage you, go grab one of the biographies that have been written about her. Just amazing life and story. And you know, what I've learned from her so far is that she would probably be upset that I've already spent this much time talking about her. Man, she was humble. I don't have this in here, but I feel like I should share it. Even the last 20 years of her life, she actually had fallen, was in an accident, and was confined to a bed for 20 years, really to one room. Could get up a little bit, but yeah, would never really walk again after this accident. And even then, she was still the most cheerful person. And she never wanted anyone to come into her room and walk away feeling anxious or depressed, but she only wanted them to experience the Lord when they, the love of Christ, when they came to meet with her. And at one point, she heard that some of them were praying for her in the compound. Some of the girls and boys had been praying for her, and it kind of upset her. She's like, okay, there's lots of stuff to pray for in the world. You don't need to be praying for me. And so again, I feel like she would already be disappointed that I've spent this long talking about her, because in her mind, it really wasn't anything incredible. We look at it and we're like, wow, look at what she accomplished. But it wasn't that way in her mind. She saw a need and she just did something about it, step by step by step. And so the question I want to close with this morning is simply this: what call has God put on your life? And I'm not asking this morning that you have everything figured out, that you have this whole big picture figured out. And she never did either. But it was always just obedient each step of the way. With each little call, each little request, each little need that God would put on her heart, she would just be faithful, be obedient to that. And so what specifically is on your heart? What's a need that you see in your life that you have the opportunity and the ability to meet? I want to close with a poem that was written by Amy. And she kind of reflecting on her life and what it took to give up so much for all these years. And here's what she says. From prayer that asks that I may be sheltered from winds that beat on thee, from fearing when I should aspire, from faltering when I should climb higher, from silken self, O captain free, thy soldier who would follow thee, from subtle love of softening things, from easy choices, weakenings. Not thus our spirits fortified, not this way went the crucified. From all that dims thy Calvary, O Lamb of God, deliver me. Give me the love that leads the way, the faith that nothing can dismay, the hope no disappoints tire, the passion that will burn like fire. Let me not sink to be a clod, make me thy fuel, flame of God. Would you pray with me? Father, I've just been blessed this week as I've had the time to reflect on the life of Amy Carmichael. I've actually been pretty encouraged too, because I appreciate that she did so much writing, and we're able to have such a good look at what she went through. And it was encouraging to realize she didn't have it all figured out, and she did struggle along the way, and there were a million different ups and downs, and things didn't always work out, and she wasn't always faithful. She had struggles too. She had fears. She had doubts. But this morning, what I pray that we take away from her life more than anything else is just to follow those simple requests, those simple acts of obedience. And when we see a need, Father, I pray that we would be people of conviction, people that wouldn't shy back, that wouldn't wait for someone else to step up, but would take that responsibility on ourselves. So I thank you for this time together. I know each one of us, man, we have different things prepared. Your word says that you have prepared good works much beforehand for each of us. and different things we're called to do. Each is unique, and so I pray that whatever that is this morning, God, we would just start with a simple step, a simple act of obedience. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.